Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of We're Gonna Need a Bigger Show from the Chattanooga Film Festival 2018. This is interview number 2 of the festival, and I could not be happier. This makes me so happy. I've been looking forward to this movie for forever. This creative team is incredible. Today, I am joined by Jen Wexler. Jen, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
And Heather Buckley.
I love you.
I love you, too. You are one of the coolest people I know. Thank you all so much for joining me. This is a lot of fun. You have not stopped moving since South by, right?
People are incredibly obsessed with this movie, and I thank all the fans out there.
Yes.
Like, I just felt like I wanted to get it made, so I liked it, and Sure. It's Jen's movie, and Jen liked it, but in that, the entire world also agreed.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank absolutely. You guys. Because after this, because it went to South by, and then it went to Buff.
Sure.
And now it's here.
Right.
And then it's going to Arizona, and then it's going to Philly.
Pretty much, and New York. We had
New York
premiere
Oh, yeah.
A couple of days ago.
Wow.
So, sold out 2 screens.
Yeah. We had the band from the movie do a show.
That's incredible.
And that's Rotten UK. If
yeah.
you guys are a fan, which is hysterical because they're not from the UK, they're from Rochester. But let me tell you, the punks up in Rochester, they make me feel lazy sometimes about my hair and gear.
They know how to get it done.
So beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes, it's incredible.
So, I mean, Jen, we talked a little bit, but I mean, this is incredible, right? This is your first feature, right, as a director?
Yeah, it's my first feature as a director, and it's been absolutely amazing. Actually, Heather was one of the first people that I showed the script to,
mm-hmm.
and then Heather came on board. We went to Frontiers
yeah,
in the Fantasia
sure.
Film Festival with it. We met Andrew Vandenhouten, and then we kind of formed up Glass Eye and his company, Hood River. And since then, it's just been like, okay, when are we going into production? And then we
Great.
Went into production, and then it's been crazy.
Yeah, Andrew actually, which is wonderful, because this is a film about friends, but it's a film also made by friends, because
sure.
of course, like, I know Larry, Jen is a very close friend of mine, I knew Andrew, and like, as soon as like the Frontiers thing hit, because I did give Andrew a preview before, he called me up while we were at the Irish Embassy, and he goes like, Heather, do not send that script anywhere. We're making this movie.
That's incredible.
That's a true story.
Before we get much more into The Ranger, I kind of want to talk about, I mean, there's obviously a place where your paths cross, but I want to talk a little bit about early life. I mean, Heather, let's start with you. You've always been a horror fan, right? I mean, this is kind of...
I was a discarded outsider like the rest of us
yeah.
in the 90s when it wasn't cool to like horror and it wasn't cool to like punk. So I was incredibly scared of horror movies until my friend CJ, who was a metalhead, because it was a solo punk practitioner.
Yeah.
But if you're like that, like the metalheads will gather around you with their D&D books and you will be absorbed into their world. So while I actually don't listen to metal music, if someone tells me they're metalhead,
right,
it just touches me in this deep area in my heart as someone who will accept and love me,
sure.
even though, you know, I like Slayer because it reminds me of DRI.
finding the sense of community even kind of at that early age.
My whole life is about finding family, and
yeah.
if you know, I think everyone in the world knows, like, my favorite film is Texas Chainsaw Massacre,
sure.
and if that is not a film about family
sure.
and people who accept each other, and then would go on to, like, the first feature being about family,
Absolutely.
Punk rock family. So to me, it's always about the family that you make that was very important.
Yeah.
So in young life, there was sort of the community. There was giving horror movies a shot a second time because I was deathly afraid of, like, I ran out when I saw, like, Bib Fortuna in the theater. Like, I was really scared of horror films, of Rubber Masks. But then something happened, because I think that I always think it's like, you're enough of an outsider enough, you're maligned enough, like, you're solo enough, you're bullied enough, that you come to identify with Jason Voorhees.
Yeah.
And then at that point, when you're 13 years old, which is key for that,
right.
which is key for that transformation, you'll also listen to the Sex Pistols when you see the movie Fear No Evil and go, wow, this is me all along. And to, like, quote what I would do in my sketchbooks, I go, I'm the Phantom because man's hatred has made me so. So that is why horror, if you want to know, and why punk rock.
Yeah, absolutely. Jen, how about you? I mean, where does the influence come from for you?
Certainly when I... So when I was maybe 12 years old, my parents moved towns. I was in middle school.
Sure.
I was ripped apart from everything that was familiar to me and put in this brand new place. Had no friends there, and so spent all of middle school and high school pouring myself into horror movies and going to shows. And so, this is The Ranger was kind of like a fusion of all the things I loved when I was like 13 years old.
And I think that's such an important thing, like for your first project to be like the culmination of the things that you love, you know, mm-hmm. like you're just able to say, okay, it's kind of throwing it all up out of your head. It's like, here it is, you know, here it is on film. When did filmmaking kind of start to become a thing for you?
Certainly when I was a kid, I was like making home movies and stuff. And then I went to a film summer camp when I was like 16 years sure. old, and I made a short horror movie about a girl that wakes up and she has blood. She finds blood, like her stomach's been ripped open.
Right.
And she looks up and on her wall it says, "Sleep well." And it was like a 1 minute long thing, and it was in black and white with no sound. But it was like, then I was like, oh my God, this is so much fun. And then it became like all I wanted to do.
Sure. Heather, how about you for you? I mean, is it a similar thing where you, because I feel like so many of us have that, like, oh, we were making films with friends, or we were at least, you know, like.
Friends?
Well, family.
Well, for me, because I was sort of very much like a Travis Bickle solo wolf growing up, is that I was originally a visual artist, a draftsman. So I used to draw all the time. I used to draw with my grandfather. I used to, because again, like of the, you know, not being the popular kid, I would just sit at home and watch movies with my parents and my father. And I just
went. Were they supportive of like the things that you liked?
No, my mother would wish that I had long hair and looks like a normal girl. My father, though, was a huge horror fan that used to take me to Fangoria conventions and things like that in the 90s. And I still have all the slips from that. And if we look closely in The Ranger, we will see Joseph Bugley cameo.
That's awesome.
So I always loved film. Film was always a part of the culture of my household. We were always renting. I would like write things down in Phantom of the Movie Guide, Splatter Movie Guides. Also like the second edition of the Fangoria VHS guy with Jason Voorhees on the cover. It's completely beat up. And I would make lists, and my father would take me to the different video stores to rent. And of course, I pirated them, which is also an important part of my history.
Right.
Like if I had to do a bio, it would be I was like a 14-year-old pirate, you know, never did. Double VCRs trying to get like Evil Dead 2 letterboxed unrated, and
he
didn't care, and he used to beg for the posters, and I had the posters and all like the standy things, like that's what I said, like unloved 13-year-old girl,
sure.
punk rock girl, like wanting the graveyard shift standy with so that's the stuff that I used to do.
And then just another note on video stores, I used to spend a lot of time just wandering video stores,
and
especially
just looking, right?
Just looking, like walking down the horror section.
Yes.
And it was always like, oh, my parents like don't know I'm in the horror section. I'm just going to hide in here and look at all the covers and just like.
Do y'all remember the Dead Pit cover that had the light up
my
eyes?
My friend, that is a joke in my family. This is because they killed all those zombies with a length of bedpost.
Yes.
So we always discuss that if a zombie invasion happens. But Jen, like when you're in the VHS aisle, so for me, I was frightened of the Evil Dead 2 poster for some reason, just the eyes, and then Microwave Massacre VHS. Are there any VHSs that you were obsessed with that you saw?
I'm trying to remember.
Because mine was definitely Dead Pit, that cover.
I think my brain didn't quite put like the title and the. So when I later in life got to like know some of these movies, it wasn't yet. But there was like definitely a Killer Dentist one that stands out in my mind.
With Corbin Burnton? Was that it?
I'm not sure. It's more just like the images.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's such a huge part about, you know, this generation is just that VHS culture and the video store culture was just so important, you know, to kind of what we became, you know?
I was one of the first people on Dread Central to sort of like write, because I kept buying them for a dollar, and it's like, are there other people obsessed with this? Because they cost like $100. Like, we can never own VHS when we were young.
Right.
We had to wait till Suncoast Video came about, and we got them for $20.
Yep.
But we could not have like a big box, and then I have like big boxes in my household.
Did y'all have the like
phenomenal
videotape, like Monster Vision with Joe Bob, or like USA Up All Night?
USA Up All Night.
Such a big part of
Joe Bob. Yeah, Commander USA, who just passed on. I loved him. All that stuff, all the horror that came off after the Saturday morning cartoons at like 11 a.m., like Dracula the series. It's also the cycle of when genre series weren't for genre fans.
Right.
So you had had Werewolf, you had even sci-fi, more Starlog focused, like Alien Nation.
Yeah, you had
Forever Night, which I'm obsessed with. I mentioned Dracula, the series, Monsters, Tales from the Dark Side. There was just so much that was just for, and I think maybe at Tales from the Crypt, that sort of moved us into more pop where we are today, because we're sort of like in the Buffy space, the Walking Dead space,
where horror
has sort of a broader appeal.
So kind of moving forward, Jen, like, when did it become, okay, like, I want to pursue this, I want to do this. Did it start with, like, the producing stuff that you were doing, or, you know, where did it kind of...
Yeah, so I ended up going to school for screenwriting at the University of the Arts in Philadelphia, and actually that's where I met my co-writer, Jocko Farino, and that's actually where he first had the idea for The Ranger.
Sure.
And he wrote the first draft when we were in school there.
Wow.
Yeah, but then, you know, so I knew I wanted to work in film. I learned all about screenwriting, and I wrote a few drafts of things, but we didn't really know what, like, how do you make money in this? How do you actually live in this?
Right.
So my best friends and I went to California after we graduated, because we were like, oh, let's start there. We moved to Hollywood and lived in a one bedroom in the middle of Hollywood Boulevard, which was terrible.
Sure.
Hung out with crackheads and stuff all the time because we didn't have jobs.
The classic story.
It's
all character building.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then eventually I got a job working for FearNet, horror TV channel, working in their marketing department as a marketing coordinator. And that really introduced me to horror as like an industry.
Sure. And a ton of people came out of that specifically.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that was kind of such a huge place for everybody.
Yeah. I met Drew DeWalt there.
Love Drew. Yeah.
And Drew was doing some content for FearNet, and we became friends, and I was like, I confessed to him one day that I really wanted to make stuff. And he ended up producing my first short. He was just, like, so encouraging, and he, like, taught me how to do it, connected me with actors and things like that. And then after that, I was, like, I got, like, the bug, and then just started making shorts and stuff.
Heather, how about for you? When did, like, you know, as a career path, when did it – I mean, I know you were writing.
Well, this is – people probably don't know my secret history of my career path is that I went to the same school as Jen, which is very strange, University of the Arts. I went in as an illustrator. I changed to be a designer. I had an incredibly strong graphic design training, which was very process-oriented, feedback-oriented. You know, you talk about the crit on the wall.
Yeah.
I also had a background in arts criticism, which I took there, and because of my interest in film, I took every film sort of history class, so I almost had a focus in that. But it was never, I'm going to work in film. It's going to be, I'm going to work for 13 years in Manhattan in agency life to go have my boutique design firm.
Right.
But at some point, like, my friend Paul Nicolosi, who's my friend now, he, like, on MySpace kept reaching out to me, and I go, who is this boy? And then he worked for Dread Central, and they had me met Dread Central, because this is what happens. It's like, and then Dread Central met me, and they go, you have to write for me. And then Fangoria changes hands, and they go, you have to write for me.
Sure.
And then everyone hears about my, like, my agency background. It's like, could you produce this? You know how to, like, pitch and put decks together and know, like, cross-disciplinary creative management. Could you should really be a producer. And when I was working as a shop supervisor, that was also echoed by Travis Stevens on We Are Still Here, and actually John Fasano from Rock and Roll Nightmare, when he was at a Boston Underground Film Fest, had dinner with me and went, listen, based on your personality and the things that you should do, you need to leave advertising and go work in film.
Sure.
So he, like, leveled with me, and he's actually thanked on the movie The Ranger, and one of the thanks at the end, John Fasano. But people
That's
said,
incredible.
Like, listen, you have to, because I never thought that I would ever make a feature film, that I would just be a fan, I would write about it, I would appreciate it. It's a part of my life and defines who I am, like all my art, like the music that I like, the visual art.
Sure.
It helps me define self. It brings me such joy. I never thought that I would have the privilege to actually make a film. That's why I call up my writing partner all the time. It's like, how the fuck is this possible?
Right.
How even? I can't even. I won't even. Years from now, I'll go, like, you're a filmmaker. It's just, it's an incredible privilege.
Absolutely. So where did your paths cross? I mean, was it through Glass Eye, or how did that kind of, like, how did you come to know each other?
I feel like Glenn McQuaid first told me about Heather Buckley. Glenn McQuaid is director. He made I Saw the Dead.
Absolutely, he's awesome.
And one of our good friends. And I don't remember the context, but I do remember from the conversation, Glenn was just talking about Heather, and I was like, who is this girl? I need to meet her.
So I love Glenn very much, and I love that Glenn has sort of an OG Irish goth background.
Yeah.
He has an amazing vinyl collection that he sometimes DJ at Brooklyn Horror Fest, and I don't know if the people around there appreciate like his mint version of like virgin prune vinyls
right. The
way I do. And I said, man, you should just DJ at like Pyramid Club and things like that. It's like you're destined.
Yeah.
You're destined for that. So that's how I knew Glenn. And that year, I Saw the Dead came out, I felt it was sort of the best horror film. I was introduced to him through sort of the New York City film community, which is like, you know, Ted Gagan and John Trani
and
Michael Gingold, and everybody hung out. I think it was at Trani's parties where I met Glenn. But I love Jen so much. And part of like wanting to get this film made, it's like Jen wanted to get this film made. I read the script. I figured out from my marketing background, positioning, audience, how it would work, how maybe the soundtrack would work, how you could do sort of like cross audience when it came into the world. I also spent a lot of time talking to sales agents and going to Fantasia and going to markets and just interested in the business because
right.
I just wanted to see how everything worked. And I felt like I could picture the place where the movie would land in the world with audiences
right,
and stuff like that. And therefore, it's like this is such a commercial idea. It's such a fun idea. And I knew that I would be able to give Jen the keys to like the punk rock part of the film, which as we know, is that a punk rocker could only ask the other punk rockers.
Right.
So it's like I knew that it was possible. And then Jen was open to that and wanted that as a part of her film. And I actually started producing it. Just I didn't mean to produce it, but I would send images from Tumblr and like these bright things and music
right,
and just stuff
yeah.
like that, because that's what I do. Because it's like, your friend Jen has a dream and what. So if you even had a project, you go, Heather, look at this project, and I'm like, and I'm walking around the internet and I see something,
yeah.
I'll send it to you just for inspiration, just to keep it going. And that's just how it started happening. And then I started pitching it to investors just because I wanted to. I never asked Jen to be part of the project.
Sure.
I was just doing it as a friend because I love her. And it's like, oh, can I pitch to investors?
That's incredible.
No big deal. But that's
like, what a great friendship.
I think that's like if you're working with someone who's going to help you make something, they have to want to do it. For no other reason other than
to want to see it. I wanted Jen.
I even pitched that way at Fantasia. It's like, this is Jen's dream for 10 years.
Sure.
When you help make it come true.
Yeah.
You know, life is short. This is her dream.
That's incredible.
Let's be a part of it, right, guys?
It just makes me so happy. Like that's
exactly
incredible.
How you have to approach it, and you have to do everything you can. I mean, producing's all, and Jen can attest to it, is a traumatic experience.
Yeah, I want to talk about that a little bit.
Because you're actually slamming your body against the earth to create
yeah.
the Appalachian Mountains.
Right.
Yes.
That
but
is what you're doing.
As from my experience, I mean, it's the one job that I don't envy at all, and you both have tremendous producing experience at this point. I mean, what things did you really kind of use from doing those jobs to really get The Ranger made, and how much of that was kind of working with like Michael and like, you know, the extra stuff that you've produced? I mean, you have over 100 credits. Like it's
I made some stuff.
It's insane. But then, you know, like the stuff with Larry with Glass Eye. I mean, like. I worship at the altar of Larry Fessenden. I mean,
dude,
like, he's.
I agree with that. I mean, my writing partner Ethan was like, and this is why this is also hysterical. So a long, long time ago, my best friend Ethan Halo tells me, it's like, you need to meet Michael Felscher,
right?
Because he's so funny, and you need to meet Larry because he said, like, listen to the commentary of Habit. He reminds me like a lot of like what you talk about genre, and that I would that he would predict that I would work with Felscher,
sure,
and that I would be, you know, because I'm like sort of like a freelance bioexorcist, and sort of Glass Eye took its wing. It's like Heather's working on the Glass Eye side,
yeah.
Because I'm just Heather Buckley.
Sure.
So that's also incredible, and I feel that's, I don't know if Larry, but I just like when I see Larry, it's like, God damn it.
Yeah.
It's,
I
fucking
mean,
Larry.
I have that
same
I have
thing,
that
and
same,
it will never
yeah.
go away. No. It will never go away.
It's like electric.
Like it's an honor.
You know,
it's an
really
honor,
is.
And it can never stop being an honor.
So what kind of things were you learning with Glass Eye that helped? I mean, I would imagine it helped tremendously on putting The Ranger into motion.
Absolutely. It's the reason, it's one of the major reasons why. I moved to New York, mm-hmm. and got introduced to Larry and Peter Polk, who produced many Glass Eye movies. And actually, this is a funny story. I went to Larry's Christmas party, Peter, instead of doing a proper interview with me, he was like, just come to Larry's Christmas party, which is like a great friends and family Christmas party where I didn't know anybody. And we all just got super drunk together. And by the end of the night, they were like, Jen's going to work for GlassEye. And then I started working like the next Monday morning.
That's
there.
That's incredible.
So
that's
always so like great. Pitch yourself to people when they're wasted. Right. That's the moral of the story.
Industry tip one from Jen Wexler.
Yes.
So, I mean, you said that the Ranger started as a concept in school. How long ago was that?
Yeah, so we went to school. We were in school about a decade ago.
We
figured out, it was just kind of in the back of our minds.
Sure.
It's like, oh, this is such a cool idea. But, I mean, how many cool ideas do you have in life? And it's just like, oh, I'm going to put that in the drawer and maybe someday it'll be brought out.
What was the thing that took it out of the drawer?
So I started producing movies for GlassEye. Yeah. And learned how to produce features. And I'm the kind of person that needs to fully understand something before I jump into it.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel like I could direct a feature until I knew how you produce a feature.
And I think that's incredible.
And I spent time watching the directors that I worked with. And I did it a couple of times before I was like, okay, I'm ready to do this.
That's so interesting, Jen, because I'm the same way, because in my design training, we were very process-oriented. So
sure.
If I can see the framework of something and how it's made, I can then be creative within that world. But I need to know what that world looks like before I'm comfortable to, like, fill it with anything. So it's the same way. That's exactly how I work.
It's
how
coming
I work
up
creatively.
With the, kind of the blueprint. That's what Jill G and I talked about that, too. And I thought that a lot of her stuff had very, like, kind of Hitchcockian influence. We talked about Hitchcock and, like, how he would, you know, it has to be a blueprint. And, I mean, it sounds like you were kind of the same way. Like, there had to be structure before you would jump into it, which I think is really interesting, especially in today's kind of art culture, where it's really great that anybody can make anything. It's also, like, produces a lot of content all the time, and some of it's, you know, not very good, and it's just kind of like... you can get kind of lost in the void.
Gatekeepers, no rules on my point of view.
Right.
I just think it's fine if people keep making.
Really?
I part of my job in an agency world was to encourage a lot of the EPs, a lot of the MBAs and stuff like that, and the people in charge of the project to sort of embrace their creativity. And they were a lot of the guys that had like Etsy accounts and stuff like that. So I think the idea that every human being should have a creative life is very important.
Sure.
And we just have a lot that's out there.
So then, how do you stand out in that? Like, I mean, how
are
you
talking about as a person or as content? How does content?
I guess content, yeah.
Well, I have two thoughts on this, which is I think how are you heard is just like the content that people want to be seeing rises to the top, and then when the stuff that doesn't gets naturally.
Okay. Yeah.
And then my other thought is just like I'm a big, even though for me I felt like I needed to produce and everything, I don't think you really know how to make a movie until you make a movie. So for people that want to make movies, I think the best thing to do is like dive in and do it, because you learn so much from the experience, and you can't learn the same thing from another person like telling you secondhand how to do it. You have to like actively do it. So I would always encourage people to just, even if what they make sucks, like just do it, because then the next time you do it, it'll be better, and the next time it'll be better than that.
Right.
But you're never going to get to that point until you do the first couple.
I think that's really interesting, because so much of like, I think I agree with that, but it's also that thing of, I get really scared of like...
But we're here.
Right.
Don't be scared.
But it's that thing of, it seems like there's always so many eyes now on like, if your first thing's not good, you may not get a second chance, you know? And I don't know, that's... How do you have that fear? How do you combat that? Like, you know, that's as me for myself, that's my biggest fear.
Well, I think there's a different point of view of the idea. Like, so you make stuff. So Jen and I are very focused sort of on the creative thing. What I was fascinated about is how the movie was received.
Sure.
Because then you realize, because it's like people brought up stuff about like the, when I looked at the film, I wanted to do it for Jen and I loved the characters in the film. And it was just like, I just felt, it was just more intuition, right?
Right, yeah.
But when I
yeah.
see the things in the real world, when people talk about like how much they think the Ranger is funny and the family element and that, and you go, yes, this is all the stuff that made me love it as well,
right.
that these other people are like pointing out for you.
Right.
And that, because I'm a critic, I have
sure.
a critic background, is a magic that I never thought would happen in film, because you make it and you can love the film, but the audience reaction to it and their tweets, and also like Jen, how like young filmmakers like run up to Jen and go, you make me believe that I could do it too.
That's incredible.
That you should just talk a little bit about that, Jen, because I see it. I see it all the film
yeah.
fests and the punk rockers and everything running up to Jen and just being in love.
Well, I just think so much of what holds people back is just thinking like they can't do it, or there's too many obstacles to do it, or how will it be received or whatever. And that, I feel like you need permission from somebody else to tell you that you can do it.
Right.
Like you need
permission that it's valued or great.
Yeah,
exactly. And
yeah.
I think, I mean, the first step is like believing in yourself. Sorry for the tackiness, but really you have to like have the confidence in yourself, and there has to be an element of like, well, I don't care what these people think. Like, I feel that I need to do this. I'm in love with the process. I love creating things. And obviously that's what's most important. Do you love all the steps that it takes to make a movie? Because there's many, many steps.
Sure.
And if you do, and that's like how you want to spend your time, then I don't think you should care as much what, you know, these imaginary third parties might think of you or your film.
Sure. I think that's great.
And I think there's the idea, because I have, again, like I always bring up my background because it's slightly different than everyone else's. Mine was always about sort of like creative lead with a group of designers and writers and creative. And so we were always collaborative, doing the wall
right.
critiques, looking at stuff, coming up with campaigns. And when I made sort of a feature film for the first time, I saw that there's this deep family and collaborative effort that happens, which I've had already in my life, but I could just see people just being in love with, one of my theories is why there's so much film out there is that the process of making the film is such a bonding and deep experience. So even regardless of what the hell it comes out at the other end, I think that process might be important for humanity and for people
sure.
to collaborate in that sort of way and to help people build things.
Yeah. I think I'm pretty transparent about this, but like I just completed my first short in 5 years.
I'm very proud of you.
My first ever sober. So
yeah.
that experience of like being, I've never been that scared in my entire life to go into something like completely stone cold sober and then being just like I had the best crew in the world and they just kind of like took me by the hand. And yes, it was that family experience. It was that like a deep, you know, like everybody just were like, yeah, we're gonna do this, like we're gonna get this done. You're right. I mean, I think that is like, it's something that you keep reaching for, you keep wanting that more and more. And I think yeah, I don't know that the
And so what if we have a lot of content? I think it's exactly
right,
what
yeah,
Jen said.
Sure.
People will find itself. And believe me, for every film that somebody like fucking hates. And I think we were talking about that recently on Facebook.
Yeah.
Someone was talking about their love of The Mangler. And it's
right.
like, God bless you. It's never been brought up in like conversation
yeah,
in my life.
Sure.
Someone else said, I also love The Mangler.
Yeah.
So whatever you're making in the world, you will have if The Mangler has two fans.
Sure.
It's pretty cool now, I think, with like social media and stuff. It's so it's a lot easier than it used to be to reach your specific audience.
Right.
And it's not like we live in a world where content is only being created from like a couple of voices and everybody just has to listen and hear whatever those powers that be tell them is what they should be watching.
Sure.
Now, you know, people can find whatever speaks to them, which is really cool.
So let's talk a little bit about the actual production. I mean, what were, you know, some of the challenges that you faced? I mean, this seems like such a big movie. I mean, it's a you know, relatively small movie, but I mean, in scope, I mean, I think it's a hell of an accomplishment. So, I mean, what were...
Thank you.
By small, the budget was slightly underneath Star Wars.
Okay.
Yeah, just a little bit. So it was so much fun. Speaking about family and stuff,
yeah, sure.
You know, we work with a lot of the same people a lot at Glass Eye Picks. You know, the DP on The Ranger, James Seward, was the same DP for the movie Robert Mockler's Like Me, which I produced. Same thing with the gaffer, Ben Duff. Our editor, or my co-editor, Abby Kilheffer, was also the key grip on the movie. So it's just like this small team, and we're just kind of like shifting positions. But we all went up to the woods, and like it was like summer camp in the woods.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it was so much fun.
That's so much fun.
This production gave me a list of impossible tasks, as much sort of like a warrior would on top of a mountain with the long hair.
We were like, what are the most difficult things on our to-do list? Let's give them to Heather.
And so I was able to get them all.
What were they? I mean, like,
wait,
what were some
of
the...
Don't tell all of them, because some of them are spoilers.
But I will not tell all of them.
Okay, she threw a punk show on our first day of the shoot. We were like, Heather, we need a punk show, so just
That was
it.
Not too bad. That was not too bad, because
that was in your wheelhouse. Like,
the hardest, I would say, one of the crazy stuff is locking picture cars in my point of view.
Sure.
But I was able to talk the language of the picture car people, because I have a classic car myself, and I love rockabilly and psychobilly, so I have that kind of vintage background. So finding the specific cars Jen wanted,
right.
The main one in the film, the van, it was just unbelievable hard to find a van, and the one that is in the film was 15 minutes away from Jen's parents' house.
Well, we needed a van that we could own that didn't cost that much money, that we could like deck out and paint and do crazy stuff to.
That ran.
What I wanted was a van version of the car in Return of the Living Dead.
And then when Jen told me that, that's when it became super important, because it's like, why does it have to be light blue? And then she told me that, and I went, whoa.
That's
it can only be light blue.
Huge, yeah.
And if you notice, for fans who love the movie, it's like Daryl, one of our EPs, helped spray paint it, is that we have ported over the graffiti from the Return of the Living Dead car on this goddamn van.
That's
trying to find like a baby blue van that's big enough that we could fit the camera inside was sort of the big deal.
Sure.
I would say like it's weird. It's like the picture cars, because at this budget, we went to one picture car company and they were able like to give us like a deal, because I feel that's like when my English town auction, New Jersey, like I was posting like in back of like hubcaps. It's like, can you help us out?
Right, yeah.
Or it's like people who are, you know, being a village, is would you help us out in this independent picture? But finding that van, finding the cop car, like those were things, but like booking a punk rock band, it was like, in getting, I was more grateful that I was able to get all my friends to show up to be in the movie, and a lot of them were in the New York City premiere, and just Rotten UK was just so amazing. And I know it was James lead singer's dream to be in a movie, and he came recommended
really
from
cool.
Patrick Rogers, because if we, and no one has asked us about the movie, it's like, our girls are not wearing wigs. Their hair was stripped and cut by Patrick Rogers from Hair Metal, who's my friend. He used to do my hair when he was in the New Jersey, New York City area.
Yeah.
And Rotten UK is his friends, and it's like, Heather, reach out to Rotten UK. I got a little nervous because I didn't know how to book a show, so I asked my friend Addie from the New York Relics how to do that, and she goes, Heather, you just have to invite them and tell them when to show up.
So I kind of wondered, Jen, like from your, point of view, what were like some of just the challenges as a director, and like were there any moments of like, this isn't going to happen, or you know, something, I mean, things like that.
I mean, after we've like, I think financing is always the hardest situation.
Sure.
But once that was all figured out, then it was just, I was just excited and literally just like on cloud nine the whole time, through pre-production, through the shoot. I mean, it certainly had some challenges. We were like in the middle of the woods, and you know, we had to like climb a mountain one day. There were like little things, like I got during our punk show that we threw, I was trying to lead the main actress, Chloe Levine, through a pit, and I wanted to lead her, and then the camera would follow her.
Sure.
And I would just look like somebody in the crowd. So I started to do that, and then like as soon as I stepped forward, somebody like punched me in the face.
Oh my God.
And so then I was like, okay, Chloe, you're not gonna do this right now. I'm not gonna do this to you on your first day of shooting. So there are like little, obviously, challenges that come up that were...
I love that Jen was very pissed off about that when that happened and went to the basement. And I looked at her as like a legendary story has been born
yes.
this very eve. And since she could fondly look back at it, you know that that is like a Werner Herzog. kind of thing to talk about of what the hell happened, that you were in a pit. But I think part of that scene does remain in the film, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You see a little bit of her starting to move towards it. I was mostly mad because, like, I got a headache, like an instant terrible headache from the punch, and then I can't, like, be my best on set when I'm, like, battling a headache.
Sure.
So, anyway. But it was funny, you know.
I mean, I think there have been your cast and your crew is, you know, very female centric. I mean, how important was that, putting that together, and what has the response been from, you know, female filmmakers and, you know, aspiring filmmakers? And just,
I think the femaleness just happened.
Okay.
Because I just happen to be Jen's friend.
Right.
I happen to be female, or as a lot of people call me out in the real world, sir. So sometimes it's hard to figure out which, and it's correct, because that's a sign of respect, and
right,
I should
be
treated that way. So I just happened to be Jen's friend, so I perceived it. I perceived the story as a punk rock genre story.
Yeah.
I identified very deeply with the characters because they remind me of the assholes that I'm friends with. And then Andrew had this great line producer, Ashley, that, because Andrew is sort of like producing partners with, and said, here, my producing partner will help you work out. I mean, it could speak to universally the progressive aspect of all the folks that we work with, that they just had chicks laying about and it's like, go make this film.
It definitely wasn't an intentional, and I totally think it's so awesome when productions are actively trying to fill their
crews. To course correct,
but for us it wasn't intentional. It was just like, these are all people that we like, we collaborate with in general.
Absolutely.
And
But they're also the type of folks that would have, I always felt that about the Night of Living Dead thing with the casting of Dwayne Jones, because of course Romero's background is Cuban, right? So
sure.
The idea that he faced a lot of prejudice in his life, and so he would sort of be open to people who aren't just the typical people there. So maybe with the people we work with, people like Larry and people like Andrew and people like Glass Eye Picks, like there's an openness to invite everyone to the party, where there's
Absolutely.
Some very closed-minded people out there that don't invite everyone to the party. Because I want to work with excellence regardless of what the hell that looks like.
Sure.
I just want to find all those cool people. I want them to all be my friends and have like the party at the end of Labyrinth.
That's
where they're all there and they're all my friends. So as many as I can collect,
That's
some people
incredible.
Don't have that lifestyle, but I think they will find that lifestyle in the future. That's the right side of history to be on. That if you're talented and you do great work and you're collaborative, that you get hired, regardless of what you are or who you are.
That's great. I think that's a great takeaway. Finishing up, what's next? I mean, this is, you're kind of knee deep in publicity and taking it around. And
I've seen some decks, but we are not. They're awesome. They're awesome, though.
Really?
So you know.
All right.
Yes, for some future stuff. We also just wrapped Larry's movie, Depraved.
Yeah, which I'm just so excited about.
I was on set there for a day, so I saw things.
Between Depraved and Ranger, and then just, you know, we're in the middle of figuring out what we're doing next, and it's enough to keep us very busy.
One of the things I'm really interested in with a lot of the people who come on the show is, what do you think the next maybe like 5 years looks like for genre film? I mean, there's so much diversity going on right now, and just like in terms of content creators and also the content itself. I mean, what do you think?
Well, I think it's super exciting and a great sign that, you know, movies like Shape of Water and Get Out were like winning Oscars.
Absolutely.
This year, and I hope that you know, people continue to tell diverse stories, and we continue to use the genre to tell diverse stories, and it seems like people are realizing that's a fad. So hopefully, even though people are thinking of it as, you know, a trendy thing, I think it's better for the world when we have that kind of storytelling.
Sure.
What I have seen is that the budgets are moving bigger. that the independent film world is trying to bring back middle-class filmmaking.
Yeah.
And also trying to bring back, and I hear a lot from sales agents, is this theatrical or not? And not coming from the studio sense, but did you make an independently funded film that is theatrical? Because if you remember in the 90s, like, what was it, like Man's Best Friend, we could see that at the Multicineplex. So the, because I actually
Dr.
thought,
Giggles and
I have the comic of that. And I was at a thrift store and someone gave me the VHS for free just like out of respect, like out of a scene from Goodfellas. Why they bring the groceries home? Out of respect.
the horror don, like that's, this is an offering.
I was able to get that. So I felt when SVOD was going to take over the whole world that was, I think everyone felt that that was our fate.
Sure.
And then the idea of like physical media going away, and I work in the physical media space, but it just seems like there's this incredibly strong collector's market. And as I talk to like bands, because like I helped work on the soundtrack with Mita Goodwin, a lot of their money is made with vinyl.
Right.
So there is, so physical media to me does not seem like something that's dead. It just seems like it's a different kind of way people want to deal with, experience the content. And the idea that budgets are moving in a great way, so then there's more sustainability around being a filmmaker, which, you know, I think was, people were nervous at a bit and sort of clutching the checks to their chest a bit. And again, like that, things start to become theatrical in the independent space is what I've seen. So while we may have been taken aback a bit when VHSs all went away, I never thought it would happen. Like I just thought, well, everyone's going to stream everything. And it's like, no. How many people go to the Draft House? How many people want to have events? How many people go to these film fests? How many, like, I can't even tell you, like, I thought I knew how many film fests were out in the world until, like, The Ranger happened and the pouring in of that it could just play every weekend for the rest of this. Just, there's so many. I think that people got a little paranoid with the Netflix.
Yeah.
And I feel good because, like, I have another film that I'm working on, and we're talking to sales agents. That's a lot of stuff that, like, repeatedly they're saying over and over again.
Sure.
What I would like to see, though, I'd like to see the idea of theatrical not being attached to scope or talent.
Right.
Because, again, like, of our 90s, like I mentioned, like, Man's Best Friend and stuff like that, is that I think I would like to see the definition of what is theatrical change.
Right.
Because we watch all these movies at film fests, every fucking one of them is theatrical then.
Yeah.
And could play on certain sort of screens or certain sort of markets.
Sure.
And I think the less conservative we become as independent pioneers, I think that's better for the industry.
Absolutely. Well, The Ranger is my absolute most anticipated movie this weekend.
Are you going to be sitting next to us?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Save me a seat. I guess the last question is, when do we get the Ranger vinyl? When's that coming out?
I have to work on that, but I was
very soon.
I was thinking double gatefold colored vinyl,
also cassette.
My friend, there will come out on cassette.
Well, I can't wait. Thank you both so much for joining me today. For people who are interested in The Ranger or who are just now hearing about it for the first time, where can they follow the progress?
We are on every social media platform you can imagine, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, The Ranger Movie. And Heather kills it.
I think for people who really want the most interactive The Ranger experience is to follow it on Twitter. That is where they're going to have the most fun. But please tag us. This is also a thing that we should leave with, and you should tell everyone this, and I said this at the New York City thing, is that when I did Q&As and intros, I always do it for other people's films. It's like, if you're an independent film and you love it, and you fucking love it, it's like you tweet about it, you put it on Facebook, you tag that damn thing, you put it on Instagram, you write it on the goddamn wall. You have to do that because all of this is still very grassroots, which is very punk rock.
Yes.
But you got to open your mouth. It's not just for like the gatekeepers to open their mouth or the reviewers. Everyone now has a voice, and everyone should use that voice if they're in love with the movie The Ranger.
Absolutely. I think that's a great place to go out on. For Bigger Show, this has been Mike D. You can catch all of our Chattanooga Film Festival 2018 coverage basically probably for the rest of the year. I mean, there's going to be a lot, so just keep your eyes open, and we will see you next time. Goodbye. We're gonna need a big show. We're gonna need a bigger, 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 bigger. We're gonna need a big show. We're gonna need a bigger show with Mike.